Hey, it's no big deal. A few friends sitting down for a chat in Geneva. Everyone ante into the pot, and let's see what Iran is willing to wager.
We don't think that these issues will be solved in one meeting. I don't think that we'll get the full perspective of Iran's willingness to engage in one meeting.
Well, the administration may be trying to keep expectations low, but let's not kid ourselves. As Iran and the U.S. sit down at the table today, the world will be watching the diplomatic game.
Stakes is high. You know them stakes is high. We're talking about
the U.S. calls. Show us your nuclear cards, please, on The Takeaway.
Y'all know them stakes is high.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from WNYC and PRI.
Good morning. It's Thursday, October 1st. I'm Celeste Headlee here with John Hockenberry.
Dela Headlee. Hey, good morning, Celeste. This hour, Saturn crashes into the sun. The quirky automaker takes a dive. We'll explain. And retirement in the middle of a financial meltdown is more like meeting the Grim Reaper. It's not about the golf. And we'll look at Google's latest attempt at world domination.
Right now, let's talk to John Limbert. He's author of the new book, Negotiating with Iran, Wrestling the Ghosts of History. Limbert was the U.S. diplomat at the American Embassy in Tehran in 1979 and was actually held hostage there. He's also a historian of Iran. So, John, are the U.S. and Iran coming to talk about the same thing? Are they here at these talks for the same reason?
Well, Celeste, that's a great question. They certainly should be. The danger is, of course, is that they may not be. And when that happens, what you get is frustration because the other side appears to be immovable and obstinate and unreasonable. And then both sides come away from the table shaking their heads, saying, "Well, we tried, but the other side just won't listen." So then where are we? We're back where we've been for 30 years.
Okay, John, stay with us. We're going to talk about that more in just a moment. But first, everything else you need to know this morning.
The challenge of difficult conversations in Geneva there. In the headlines, Indonesia is reeling from a second earthquake. More than 500 are dead following yesterday's quake. The final death toll may be in the thousands. The U.S. military is moving doctors, food, and water to Samoa and American Samoa. A police commander there says it will take weeks to account for all the missing after a South Pacific earthquake caused a tsunami.
Back in the U.S., GM will stop making Saturns, as John mentioned. They're going to close down those dealerships. A deal to sell the brand to Roger Penske fell apart. And the president's top security advisors appear divided over Afghanistan following a high-level meeting yesterday. The White House says it will be weeks before the president makes a decision on troop levels. More on those Iran nuclear talks we just mentioned. They're underway right now in Geneva. The U.S. is there along with other world powers. Well, Wall Street dipped a bit yesterday. Again, the Dow opens at 97.12. The S&P will start trading at 10:57, and the NASDAQ opens up at 21:22. So, John, you said the difficulty of tough negotiations in Geneva.
Tough conversations.
You know, maybe none of us have sat down to talk about nuclear uranium enrichment or equality between countries, but all of us have had to sit down at some point and have a difficult negotiation with someone, right? So we're asking people...
I apologize for the hostages. I apologize.
That's right.
That plane we shot down, sorry. You know, what should they do?
Yeah, we're asking you, what advice would you give the negotiators? What do you do when you're starting out with some tough negotiations? 877-8-MY-TAKE.
The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Good morning. The United States and five other world powers are all in Geneva right now. They've started with some high-stake talks with Iran to talk about nuclear activities. They're meeting in an 18th-century villa in Geneva, Switzerland. Meanwhile, the Iranian foreign minister has made a very low-key visit to Washington. It's the first time an Iranian of that rank has visited in a decade. These Geneva talks may be the most significant contact between the U.S. and Iran in 30 years. Join us to talk about that. Mark Landler from our partner, the New York Times, the diplomatic correspondent, is with us. So, Mark, the U.S. The Obama administration seems to be kind of keeping things on a down low, keeping expectations relatively minor, but the stakes are pretty high here, right?
The stakes are indeed very high, and the administration, I think, is trying to make the point that what we should probably watch for more than anything else is whether this meeting will be followed up by another one. if the Iranians come into the meeting and offer just enough to keep everyone willing to talk further, then there probably will be a follow-up meeting. It'll probably occur quite quickly, maybe even later this month. And at that meeting and subsequent meetings, you'd really start to see the two sides get into the heart of the matter, which is, you know, fully disclosing Iran's nuclear program and then trying to develop ways for the international community to persuade Iran to accept much closer supervision to ensure that it remains a peaceful nuclear program, which, of course, is what the Iranians say it is, but which the West doesn't believe it is.
Okay. Also joining us is John Limbert. He was a U.S. diplomat at the American Embassy in Tehran in 79. He was held hostage there for more than a year. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Celeste.
And George Lopez, author of a series of books on sanctions. He holds the Hesburgh Chair in Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and he serves as the Jennings Randolph Senior Fellow at the United States Institute of Peace, working on economic sanctions issues. So, John, let me ask you, this visit from the Iranian foreign minister, the first trip for an Iranian of that rank in about 10 years or so, is that a good sign?
The way it was billed, I think, was simply technical, that he wanted to look at the Iranian interest section here in Washington. But of course, the way the relation has been over the past 30 years, it's going to be interpreted and reinterpreted. If it leads to something, if it leads to a reciprocal visit by somebody to Tehran, then it's interesting. But it could be like a lot of other things that have happened, where someone makes a gesture, something happens, and then it goes nowhere.
So we were talking earlier about whether or not the U.S. and Iran are really here to talk about the same things. Obviously, the U.S. and the other countries that are meeting with them want to talk about nuclear power and nuclear weapons, but Iran has said that's not what they want to talk about, correct?
That's exactly right.
So what does Iran want to talk about?
Well, what you risk here, of course, is what I call asymmetric negotiations. That is, where both sides come to the table and each ends up talking about different things. Iran has a whole series of concerns, but the underlying one is to revise or revisit its whole relationship, and it sees its relations with the West and with the U.S. in particular as being unequal, and comes to the table with a huge grievance, real or perceived, that the U.S. aim is not to reach some agreement between equals, but to humiliate it and to eventually to overturn the Islamic Republic and the government in Tehran.
So obviously we've been talking a lot about, hearing a lot about sanctions from the Obama administration. Here's what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton had to say on CBS's Face the Nation.
If we don't get the answers that we are expecting and the changes in behavior that we're looking for, then we will work with our partners to move toward sanctions.
So, George Lopez, you're an expert in sanctions. Do we have any idea what kind of sanctions they're considering against Iran?
Well, I think we certainly do, but I think we need to keep in mind that sanctions are a tool that serve a larger policy. So in that sense, I agree with my two colleagues who have already spoken that the real goal here in the policy in the short term is to keep talking and have the next meeting and the next meeting. And even if the Iranians do a lot of venting in this meeting and not focus in on the issues, if the Obama administration has the sanctions in their back pocket and the threat of sanctions, they increase on the Iranians the costs of not getting down to business in the next meeting and the next meeting. So you have a couple of things going on at once, I think. One is the interesting irony that after all these years of the Iranians screaming that the United States doesn't want to come to the table, now the United States has come to the table with both a fig leaf in the one hand and potential sanctions in the other, and it says to the Iranians, we're here, now it's your turn to talk, and the Iranians seem a little caught off guard or need to do a little muscle flexing in order to establish their place at the table. Secondly, it seems that having fessed up to the IAEA about a secret facility, the Americans don't have to demand the whole ball of wax right away. They can just simply state what the head of the IAEA has said, and that is, we need to see the plans and the history and the development of this, since in violation of Code 3.1, you didn't disclose these. And I think we'll learn a lot early on about the Iranians' long-term view of these negotiations, if they're willing, after some screaming and shouting, to come and hand those over. I think the sanctions that are at hand are ones that may at the UN level seem kind of light and a slap in the wrist, but I think you'll see what happened repeating itself from 2008, that the U.S. Treasury Department and the State Department are willing to go ahead with more tougher measures on Iranian banks, which can really complicate life in the Middle East for the Iranians.
So, Mark Lendler of the New York Times, what we have been hearing about that they're willing to go beyond a slap on the wrist in terms of the sanctions. What have we heard from the Obama administration on what kind of sanctions they're willing to pursue?
Well, I mean, the list of potential sanctions is pretty well known. It includes things like, as my colleague just said, cutting banking ties, and making the cost of business for the Iranians more expensive. There's also possibly cutting insurance on shipments to Iran. There's cutting foreign investment, delivery of equipment to their oil and gas industry. So those are all sanctions that are fairly well understood, some of which have been tried in one form or another. There's a sort of a second, more stringent level of sanctions that you could contemplate, which would include trying to put an embargo or a block on shipments of refined fuel products to Iran.
Because they don't have a lot of good refining technology.
That's right. I mean, although they're a very big producer of crude oil, they actually import a lot of refined fuel. And if you were to embargo that, you could actually inflict some pain on the country very quickly. The problem with that one is that there's a lot of concern about inflicting pain on ordinary Iranians at a time when the country has already been through a political upheaval, and there's a sense that if you have a government that was only reelected with a great deal of controversy and there's a lot of questions of its credibility and legitimacy, you don't want to slap a sanction on the country that ends up driving the people back into the arms of that government. And so that's one of the reasons that you'll hear Europeans in particular, the French have been quite open about this, but even the British have reservations about going that route. So it's not to say that it would never happen, but it's not going to be first on the list. And most important, just to reemphasize the point that any sanctions are going to happen hand-in-hand with efforts to keep this dialogue going, because there's a sense that if you use sanctions simply as a punitive measure, if you're simply out to punish the government with sanctions, that's been proven in the case of Iran not to be very effective. So the goal here is to try to keep the dialogue process going. And there is some guarded optimism on the American side that because of this chaotic election, because of the disclosure of this new nuclear enrichment facility, that the Iranians are more on the defensive than they have been coming into talks for a long time, so that there may actually be a possibility to move this along in the way that didn't exist for some time.
Okay, John Limbert, one last question for you. Iran has said it is not willing to discuss its nuclear rights during this meeting. Are they talking about the right to enrich uranium, or are they talking about the right to build nuclear weapons?
They are talking about their right to be treated as an equal member of the international community. And at the bottom, as we said before, that from the Iranian point of view is what these talks are about. And if they're talking about one set of things, we only talk about another. I'm afraid the prospects for the negotiations, they're going to be very, very difficult.
Okay, John Limbert is author of the new book, Negotiating with Iran, Wrestling with the Ghosts of History. He was a U.S. diplomat at the American Industry in Tehran. George Lopez holds the Hesburgh Chair in Peace Studies at the University of Notre Dame. And Mark Lendler is the diplomatic correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. Thanks to all of you.
You can email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org or call us toll-free at 877-8-MYTAKE.
869-8253.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MYTAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.